This is Bill Munhausen with week 3 in our Biblical Citizenship series, subtitled Understanding the Times. We don't like to dwell on the negative, but it's important to understand the psyche of the people who now make up a significant minority of Americans. According to surveys, 3 out of 5 Americans believe there is no moral absolute truth, and 1 out of 2 Christians believe there is no absolute moral truth. I'm skeptical of surveys, and even more skeptical of the interpretations of surveys, because it all depends on how you ask the question. If you ask a Christian, "Do you know the absolute truth in every question?" they could justifiably answer no. When will Christ return? Will I see my pet in heaven? Can a Christian be a Democrat? Is the Apple logo a satanic symbol? Can America return to follow the Constitution? If you don't know the answer to questions like these, the interpreter of a survey might conclude you don't believe in absolute truth. Nevertheless, we agree that once Americans abandoned God, they lost their only reliable compass for morality and truth. Who would have believed 10 years ago that surgical alteration of children from one gender to another would be a practice advocated by an influential number of parents? Who would believe that a medical profession called to do no harm would actively engage in such practices? This is evidence of the scope of confusion in our country in regard to both truth and morality. Furthermore, Christian leaders have had little to say in opposition to this rise in evil. Not surprisingly, the fastest growing forms of religion in America are non-religion and anti-religion. Parallel to the trend in religious faith is the rise of socialism as an alternative to free enterprise. The trend is happening in spite of the fact that in 5,800 years of recorded history, socialism has never worked once in any culture in any century. Nevertheless, naive people think that socialism is something new and an innovation that will lead to a better world. In reality, socialism is simply a modern word for ancient tribalism. In tribal culture, there is a leader and there is everyone else. The tribe would go out and hunt an animal to bring it back to camp. After cooking the meat, the leader would have the first portion, and the rest was distributed somewhat equally among the tribe. I'm sure the strong might grab a bigger share, but the basic intent was to feed everyone. Socialism works the same way. Everyone works to produce goods and services, and a leadership elite take their share and distributes the remainder to the masses. In neither system is there an incentive to do more than what is required. There is little innovation or determination to excel or opportunity to be free to work a different way. Such cultures don't progress. They merely subsist. Interestingly, the first European settlers experimented with socialism back in the 1600s. The Jamestown colony experimented with pooling their production and allowing each person to take according to their need. Many citizens saw no purpose in working as long as someone else provided food, so the numbers among the workers declined. The leaders of the Jamestown colony solved the problem by giving everyone their own land to work, and giving them the freedom to grow just enough food for themselves or produce and sell extra. Within a season, food shortages went away. This is how America broke out of socialism in the 1600s before any other major nation. People are making irrational choices in modern America because the foundation of truth has been taken out. Years ago, we operated a science center that advocated a biblically based worldview, and we warned people that the outcome of abandoning that biblical basis would be devastating. We are now living in that devastated culture where truth and morality are once again whatever seems right to each individual. Truth and fact have been replaced by personal opinion. It was prophesied in 2 Thessalonians 2:10-12. Quote, "They did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved, and for this reason God will send them strong delusion, that they should believe the lie, that they all might be condemned who did not believe the truth, end quote. Believing a lie has a high cost and consequence, as it always causes harm. The Jamestown colony believed that they could all just share the production of whoever wanted to work. Their assumption that people would willingly work was incorrect. The truth is that workers needed incentive. As people of God, we have to be lovers of truth more than anything else. It's commanded, John 17:17 says, "Sanctify them by the truth. Your word is truth." God's word is the source of absolute truth. If we're not in it, reading it and absorbing it, we're not going to have the truth we need. The Bible addresses every issue we face, even the truths that are not revealed. I mentioned earlier the difficult questions, like when will Christ return? Scripture doesn't give us the day and time, but makes the answer clear nevertheless. No one but the Father knows the date and time, so we must be ready always. Americans must now work hard to find truth, and we're warned in Revelation 21:8 regarding the consequences of not doing it God's way. It reads, "But as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death." Defending the truth requires courage and perseverance. To turn the culture, we must love the truth, find the truth, and defend the truth. It is time for us to heed the challenge of our very first Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, John Jay, who said, "Every member of the state ought diligently to read and to study the Constitution of his country and teach the rising generation to be free. By knowing their rights, they will sooner perceive when they are violated and be the better prepared to defend and assert them." This quote by one of the authors of the Federalist Papers sums up the purpose of this class and provides the outline of our journey together through our founding documents. It is important to spend time in the past because history shows us the formula that has made us the most successful nation in history up to this point. It's important not only to defend what is constitutional, but also to assert our constitutional rights. You do not win by being on defense. You win by being on offense. The Constitution still works today, even two centuries later, because it was based on timeless principles of jurisdiction that govern human behavior. Where do you fit in as a believer in Jesus Christ? This is not the first century where the government of Rome is your enemy. We, the people, are the government. The Founding Fathers believed that a lack of patriotism was selfishness. Benjamin Rush said, "Patriotism is as much a virtue as a justice, and is as necessary for the support of societies as natural affection is for the support of families." The amor patriae, love of country, is both a moral and a religious duty. It encompasses not only the love of our neighbors, but of millions of our fellow creatures, not only of the present, but of future generations. Dr. Benjamin Rush taught that public schools had three purposes. 1, to teach students to love and serve God. 2, to teach students to love and serve their country. And 3, to teach students to love and serve their families. Dr. Rush put country before family because he understood that if we ever lost control of our country, it would become the great enemy of our families. These were not just philosophical concepts to America's founders. At the time of the American Revolution, most of the signers of the Declaration of Independence signed the document, understanding it might be their death warrant. At the age of only 21, Captain Nathan Hale was captured after volunteering for a recon mission. Just before he was executed, he gave a passionate speech for freedom and closed with his famous One Life statement that has inspired generations to sacrifice for freedom. "I only regret I have but one life to give. The sentiment reminds us of John 15:13, which says, "No greater love has any man than that he lay down his life for his friends." The best way to honor those who gave their one life for our freedom is to earn the freedom that they sacrificed their lives for. Abraham Lincoln said we should take increased devotion to the cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. Many Americans, including Christians, are used to coasting through life because American freedom has made life easy. However, now we must recognize that the fate of the free world depends on you and me. An action step that resonated with everyone in our class was Constitution Week. It was first introduced to us as a state law, which Rick Green championed when he was in the Texas State Legislature. Here is an excerpt from the Texas legislation. "To educate students upon the sacrifices made for freedom in the founding of this country and the values on which this country was founded, the week in which September 17 falls is designated as Celebrate Freedom Week in public schools. The State Board of Education shall adopt rules requiring each social studies class to include, during Celebrate Freedom Week, or during another full school week as determined by the Board of Trustees of a school district, appropriate instruction concerning the original intent, meaning, and importance of the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution, including the Bill of Rights, in their historical contexts. The religious references in the writings of the Founding Fathers shall not be censored. The rules must provide for the study of the Declaration of Independence, to include the study of the relationship of the ideas expressed in that document to subsequent American history, including the relationship of its ideas to the rich diversity of people as a nation of immigrants, the American Revolution, the formulation of the United States Constitution, and the abolitionist movement which led to the Emancipation Proclamation and the women's suffrage movement. All of us can help prepare the next generation by getting our local school districts to participate in Freedom Week. One important matter of note is that the Texas legislation requires that the religious expressions of the founders are not redacted, as they are vital to context for the ideas of the founders." As I said, this was inspiring to us, but there's more. We went back to the Patriot Academy and asked whether they had actual curricula and presentation material, because we were skeptical that our school could teach such a course effectively because of the secular underpinnings of public education. We learned that Patriot Academy had complete lessons in PowerPoint for both public and private schools and a strategy regarding how to approach our school district. But there was still more. There is actually a federal law similar to the Texas regulation. It says each educational institution that receives federal funds for a fiscal year shall hold educational programs on the United States Constitution on September 17 of such year for the students served by the educational institution. Unfortunately, the federal law is so vague that public schools have determined all kinds of workarounds to avoid teaching what Texas requires. Nevertheless, we can cite the federal statute as a compliance mandate to encourage schools to consider our teaching. With the Constitution Week project, we have a practical project to implement as a way to utilize both our Christian duty to foster a more righteous nation and our civil government duty to uphold the Constitution. Isn't it odd how every office holder in America recites an oath to defend the Constitution, but few understand it or use it as a guide for their activities in civil government? That realization brings us back to how we study the Constitution. Our approach to study the Constitution is not an exhaustive study. Think of this class as the quick start guide to the Constitution, so we as citizens can get plugged in. Then you should go back home and study the Constitution more extensively to address specific issues. The Patriot Academy recommended these resources for further study: the full 10-week Constitution Alive series at Patriot Academy, the full Foundations of Freedom series at wallbuilders.com, The 5,000-Year Leap, a book by W. Cleon Skousen. The Heritage Guide to the Constitution by Edwin Meese, Dr. Matthew Spaulding, and Dr. David Forte. Constitutional Literacy with Mike Ferris. Stanbury's Catechism on the Constitution, also available at patriotacademy.com. Our goal is to identify our rights and know how to protect and preserve them so that you can fulfill your Christian duty in the political sphere. As we study, we focus on original intent, not judicial interpretation. Thomas Jefferson said, "On every question of construction, carry ourselves back to the time when the Constitution was adopted. Recollect the spirit manifested in the debates, and instead of trying what meaning may be squeezed out of the text or invented against it, conform the probable one in which it was passed." Fortunately, the framers of the Constitution left us extensive journals of their discussions so that we can know their intent by their own words. James Madison said, "I entirely concur in the propriety of resorting to the sense in which the Constitution was accepted and ratified by the nation. In that sense alone, it is the legitimate Constitution. And if that be not the guide in expounding it, there can be no security for a consistent and stable Constitution, more than for a faithful exercise of its powers. What a metamorphosis would be produced in the code of law if all its ancient phraseology were to be taken in its modern sense." That's worth repeating for emphasis. What a metamorphosis, what a change, would be produced in the code of law if all its ancient phraseology, the way it's worded, were to be taken in its modern sense. The Constitution is not a living document, as some tend to say. It's meant to be an inflexible standard, whose meaning can only be changed by amending it in the manner prescribed in the Constitution. James Wilson said it even plainer. "The first and governing maxim in the interpretation of a statute is to discover the meaning of those who made it." Original intent is like the owner's manual of the Constitution. It helps us identify the correct application of the tools we've been given. Words are tricky in that they are only imperfectly communicate what the author has in mind. The challenge with a political document is to understand and apply what was intended, rather than just make up what we think the words mean. Once we understand the original meaning reflected in the writings of the participants, the principle that is communicated is the same and completely applicable to today. Another principle we will use in studying the Constitution is to take sections as amended. The U.S. Constitution has been amended 27 times, so the meaning of the original text has been affected by all those modifications. It would be confusing to learn from the original document, for example, that senators are appointed by state legislatures, only to learn later that senators were to be elected by the voters in each state, according to one of the amendments. It's important, however, to know and to remember that the original intent of the authors of the Constitution is no longer in effect, which might cause us to consider how amendments can result in unfortunate consequences. To assist us in understanding the Constitution as amended, Patriot Academy has created a special version called The Constitution Made Easy, which shows the original text side by side with a version reflecting the 27 amendments. Another principle we will use in studying the Constitution is to use plain language for basic understanding, but not as a substitute for the original text. The common usage of the English language has changed over the last two centuries. For example, Article 1, Section 8.9 originally reads, "To constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court." Our modern understanding of the word inferior implies something like not as good or lesser quality. But we know the founders weren't authorizing Congress to create crummy courts. So the Constitution Made Easy rewrites it closer to modern language usage, saying, to create courts underneath the Supreme Court. In that example, the change in usage is rather obvious, but other clarifications are more important. Article 1, Section 2 originally stated, when vacancies happen in the representation of any state, the executive authority thereof shall issue writs of election to fill such vacancies. We can figure out that the executive authority of each state must mean the governor. But a writ of election seems to mean calling for a special election. The actual meaning as intended is that the governor appoints someone to fill the balance of the term. So it is rewritten. When any representative does not finish his or her term, the governor from his or her state must appoint someone for the remainder of the term. By showing both the original language and the clarification language side by side, the author of the Constitution Made Easy uses plain language to express the intent while also allowing readers to see the original wording and determine the intent for themselves. Why all this trouble to understand the Constitution? We have a responsibility to teach the Constitution, not just to the rising generation, but to everyone around us. In our day of social media, everyone has a platform. Many of our political controversies would be resolved if people understood the framework of American government and resolved to work within it. They would understand that Congress is the only lawmaking branch, and that presidents must not rule through executive orders, nor should courts legislate from the bench. We would greatly limit the importance of the president, and we would less frequently defer to the Supreme Court's opinion about overturning laws passed by the people's representatives. The lack of understanding about the role of each branch of government has resulted in an unbalanced system that can only be made right by reinstituting the constitutional framework. One last thought is that the Constitution is a fairly simple document, and you don't have to be a super smart person to understand it. You don't have to be a constitutional scholar. The Founding Fathers were ordinary men, and the Constitution they made was for ordinary people. It has a brilliant structure, but they conveyed it to us using intentionally easy language so that we could easily implement it. One thing that is missing from my biblical citizenship class is a flavor of the content. So let me close with this promotional clip from Patriot Academy.
Are you one of those people that looks at everything going on in our country right now and you think, what the heck is happening? Jesus, please just come back right now. Okay, obviously we don't know when Jesus is coming back, so we shouldn't ever throw in the towel on freedom. I'm not one of those people that says, hey, you need to go buy some prepper food and guns because the apocalypse is coming. No. Now, I don't think it's bad to have those things, but regardless, we should never lose hope. Now, what did Jesus say? Well, he made it clear in Luke 12:43 that we are to keep working until his return. So when looking at our nation's politics, especially as Christians, what does that look like? Well, Founding Father George Mason put it so well when he said, no free government nor the blessings of liberty can be preserved to any people but by a frequent recurrence to fundamental principles. Now, what is he saying? Well, he's saying, in order to have a free nation, a nation that actually gets to enjoy the blessings that liberty brings, you have to be a nation of people that knows the fundamental principles that produce that liberty, and you have to have a frequent recurrence to them. When you become a nation of historically ignorant idiots, and that particular group is growing fast, then you become a nation that is incapable of defending its rights and liberties against a tyrannical government. And sadly, that is exactly what we're seeing so much of throughout our nation right now. A bunch of ignorant idiots allowing power-hungry, empty-suited politicians to just completely run over the rights of the people. So, let me ask you, how do we fix that? First things first, understand that we are playing the long game here. We are not going to flip this country back to what made it great overnight. But we can, day by day, week by week, month by month, keep learning about those fundamental principles and bring other people along with us to learn about those things. And eventually, soon enough, you'll start helping people get elected to offices, locally, on the state level, even federally. And those small steps over time are what you have to do in order to protect and preserve the freedom and liberty that we enjoy in this nation and pass it on to the next generation.
President Ronald Reagan once said, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. That statement is more true now than ever before.
Biblical principles are what produce freedom in society, but you won't have biblical principles in society in which you don't have citizens with a biblical worldview.
The truth of the matter is most Americans don't have a biblical worldview, which means that they have to draw on, or they've chosen to draw on, other worldviews that are available to them.
The further we move away from biblical principles, the further we move away from liberty and freedom.
Remember in the Old Testament, after the scripture had been hidden for so long and it was brought out and it was read before the people?
Right.
The people wept with joy.
That's right.
Because there's freedom in the law.
Right. I found over the years that the only really reliable matrix to reality is the biblical blueprint.
We've relegated to say, look, politics is dirty. That's what pastors say. Politics is dirty. I don't do politics. Well, the church is dirty. What's your point?
There's so many people today that are educated at institutions where they come out as secular humanists.
Yeah.
And so there's no fear of God.
If you're a Christian, a person of faith, you must care about what's happening in our culture. You must get involved in voting.
Well, the Constitution is so unique. It is the only constitution that actually limits government.
So in other words, if you put bad people into a broken structure, you're gonna get bad results. If you have a bad system, you elect good people, they go into a bad system, you're still gonna get a bad result.
And the founders knew this nation was already very diverse. Federalism allows that diversity to flourish.
And you begin to love what God loves and hate what he hates in the scriptures because your heart is lining up with the heart of God because of the gospel.
It is astounding to me how many people in America have been indoctrinated into a condition of complete ignorance.
I think biblical citizenship as a Christian would be stewardship, that God has given us this republic to be stewards over.
In terms of actually having a biblical perspective on things, even in terms of believing that the Bible is a trustworthy document to give them guidance for their future, most Americans are not in that place.
As people are experiencing tyranny, they're asking why, what has happened, and there's just this feeling of being lost right now and not knowing where to turn. And you just gave us the foundation. This is truth.